TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. It's the Score North Twin Show.
Welcome to the Score North Twin Show. As always, Zolgat and Jake Pugh. Twins, Jake played a doubleheader on Tuesday in St. Louis, winning game one and losing game two. And I would say the primary talking point, although there's quite a few off the two games against Cardinals, I'd say the primary talking point is the difference in starting pitching performances, because there's a lot of good to talk about. Jose Barrios had a second really strong start. He tired in the sixth, but man, through five, he was great. And Randy Dobnik appeared to hit some regression in game two and lost control, which was sort of weird and odd and not a good thing. But let's start with Barrios. How much different after these last two starts do you feel about Barrios now? Because he seems to be pitching with a clear mind. And this goes back to his comment after he beat Chicago. The White Sox.
Yep.
He beat Chicago. And he talked about something at home having been an issue, and it was almost as if he had put that behind him. And really, these last two starts to me seem to be Jose Barrios pitching with a completely clear mind.
Absolutely. I don't know if you know, whatever personal issue he had has been resolved, and that's the case, or if he's just pitching better for another reason. Doesn't really matter. Obviously, we hope that the personal issue has been resolved, but just from an on-field performance perspective, it doesn't really matter. That, you know, all that matters is that he's pitching really well right now. He looked fantastic yesterday. You're right that he tired in the sixth when he gave up the home run. But, man, his fastball had bite. You know, he was consistently at 94, 95. The breaking ball looked great. This is the Barrios that can shut down playoff teams, opposing lineup, you know, really good offensive lineups in the playoffs. If he keeps pitching like this, if, you know, he has, what, three or four more starts maybe left this year, if let's say he has four more starts, if three of them are like this, he's either pitching game one or game two for me, because he looks like the Barrios that we know when he's at his best. And when Barrios is at his best, he's one of the better pitchers in the league. That was very impressive yesterday. And one note, you know, you said he tired in the sixth, and I totally agree. In the playoffs, you're probably not going to ask him to go more than five. Unless he's really, really rolling. So I don't think fatigue will be a huge issue. I still worry about how he'll perform, you know, on the big stage, because he struggled a little bit with that in the playoffs last year and in 2017, although he pitched okay in both of those. So that remains to be seen, but very good signs. Very good signs from Jose Barrios.
Yeah, I've gone from being concerned, definitely concerned, to saying he might not be, again, to go back to our longtime conversation about Barrios, he might not be a true ace, but the guy that we saw on Tuesday was damn good. And you're right. If he has another start or two like that to follow this one, I'm getting closer and closer to saying, Kenta, you've done a great job, and you are for sure in our starting rotation in those first three games. But there will probably be a temptation, if he has at least two more starts like that now consecutively, there might be a temptation to go game one, for sure game two. But you do feel good. The most important thing is, I think as we have this conversation, and the Twins in a weird schedule quirk now because they played doubleheader for the Cardinals, say, because the Cardinals had to have some help. The Twins are off Wednesday, Thursday. I think as we have this conversation right now, compared to a couple weeks back, you feel really, really good about that first round, and saying, okay, if nothing else, Maeda, let's say Pineda, Barrios, where before it was like, okay, and it's Barrios, and he's got to be handcuffed to Rich Hill, and I don't feel good about that. That conversation is becoming a lot less concerning. So I do think that if you're Baldelli and Falvey and the Twins, you feel pretty doggone good right now about the prospect of throwing those three guys out for a potential three-game series.
You definitely do. And, you know, as far as the debate about game one or game two, it really doesn't make any difference, right? I mean, game one versus game two, you're playing both of those games no matter what. Really, the debate is whether you want to start a guy in game two or hold him back to game three. So, you know, I think right now, Maeda and Barrios are my 1-2, you know, put them in whichever order you want, and then Pineda's in game three if you need him. But yeah, I mean, I think you feel great when you combine those three Plus Rich, you know, a couple innings, hopefully good innings from Rich Hill, and then the back end of this bullpen, which has been outstanding, and Matt Whistler is now joining that, you know, that group as a really elite reliever. And then you potentially have got Odorizzi in the mix. You're looking really good. The pitching has been carrying them all year. You know, it's like a total opposite from 2019. The bats are maybe starting to wake up a little bit, but it's really been the pitching all year. And with Barrios now pitching well, I mean, you have to feel like you're one of the better, have one of the better staffs in the American League going into that three game series.
Randy Dobnik. So the Twins got off to a pretty quick lead again in game two. He goes 2 2/3, gives up two hits, gives up 5 runs, I believe. Is that correct? Walks 2, strikes out 2, hit a couple guys. What do you make of that start? Because here's the weird thing. He lost the strike zone completely for the most part, and he couldn't recover it and get it back. And I don't know if we just write this off as a sort of a weird, bad start for him, or it becomes concerning. I guess it solidifies my opinion that, you know, in a three-game series, I'm not even tempted to start him. But I don't know what to make of that start. And look, he has pitched great at times. But when he lost it on Tuesday in game two, he completely lost it. Like, he was – they could have taken him out a couple guys before they did. And I'm watching that game. I'm just thinking, wow, this is at least semi-concerning. How about that for fair?
Yeah. So I think he lost his release point, essentially. We've seen Dobnik the last few starts fall behind a lot of hitters. And walk a lot more guys than he did last year at the beginning of this year. So I think this has been a little bit of a trend. Obviously, it's never been to the level that we've seen yesterday. But he has been falling behind a lot of guys, and he's been getting a ton of double plays, which you expect him to because he's a ground ball pitcher. But that's sort of how he's been getting out of a lot of these jams. Yesterday, I think he just totally lost it. He just lost his release point, and it was bad. I was surprised they didn't take him out earlier. You know, it seems like they let him stay in at least one hit or two long. I'm sure hoping that he would escape with a double play. But, I think regression was coming for Dobnik because he was pitching at a level that was so elite. I mean, he was a legit Cy Young contender through the season's first month. So we knew regression was coming. This is concerning because you figured regression would come in the form of balls getting through, ground balls getting through. And maybe a few home runs, but you didn't think he would just totally lose command the way he did yesterday and the few starts leading up to this where he struggled with that. He's a guy that needs command. I mean, because he's not a strikeout pitcher.
Right.
So you've got to have command of that sinking fastball to be effective. I have confidence that he'll regain it because for most of his time in the big leagues, we've seen him be a really good pitcher. I would not start him in any of those three games for sure. But I still think the sample size is large enough on him now that you have to assume yesterday was an aberration and then he's still a pretty good pitcher. He's probably a number five, he's probably a number five starter and a good number five starter, but he certainly has to regain command if he's going to be pitching the playoffs. If this continues on, the next few starts, then he probably can't even be on the roster, but we've seen enough from him to think that he can be effective when he's on. And if you bring him into the playoffs, if he does recover this season, you bring him into the playoffs and you find that he's falling behind guys, you yank him very quickly. I mean, the leash is very, very short. So I still think he can be on the staff, but yesterday was bad. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it.
All right. I've got a question for you based off of something that transpired in game one. And when it comes to Rocco, I'm just sort of flat out confused by the strategy here. So a couple of days ago, I'm playing the Tigers at Target Field. Rooker started in right field, and he got on base. And in the fifth inning of that game, Rocco pinch ran Jake Cave for him, not because Rooker was hurt, but because Cave has superior speed and, more importantly, for defensive purposes, starting in the top of the sixth, okay? So that's a move that you could debate was made too quickly, but it just shows the level of concern and probably the premium, rightfully so, after we all complained last year about what Rocco perceives as making his team defensively as strong as possible. And I do think in that area they are much improved from 2019. But the question I've got for you is, and this is not a going to be a playoff problem, it's not a season-long problem, and in fact, with 15 games left, it's just a slam-dunk move. I understand that Ryan Jeffers, as long as Garver is out and Avila is out, can't catch every single game. And your backup catcher, by your choice, is Astudillo. But explain to me why on earth Astudillo catches the final two innings, and that could be the eighth and ninth or sixth and seventh. It catches the final two innings of any game in which he plays when Jeffers is young, Jeffers is defensively superior, and Astudillo is a catching train wreck. Like, there's something is waiting to go wrong, and the longer he plays, the more the probability probably grows that something is going to go wrong. I'll give you the Barrios ground ball with Goldschmidt on first. That should have been a double play, but Goldschmidt was on second because of a pass ball. And then the wild pitch that scored Paul Goldschmidt from third was a ball that Ryan Jeffers and Garver, for instance, 1,000% stopped. They get in front of it and stop it. Am I missing something here in wondering why Baldelli would leave Astudillo in games to catch once you get to about the eighth?
So we have to assume that Jeffers is healthy, but did you see the interaction he had with Doogie on Twitter?
No. Jeffers. So, and Jeffers played game two, so he was healthy.
Yeah, so Doogie wrote on Twitter that Jeffers was quote-unquote sore, I believe is the term that he used. This was a couple days ago. And Jeffers replied to the tweet and said, "I am?" question mark.
No, I didn't see that.
Which is great.
And good Doogie, for Jeffers. He's funny.
I know. And Doogie replied to him and said something like, "A Twins official told me that you were a little dinged up."
Pitcher!
Yeah, I'm butchering the language a little bit, but you can go back on Twitter and look at it. It was pretty great.
Okay, good.
I think they're all about rest and recovery, and with catchers, you know, you do have to be careful with them. And so they're erring on the side of giving Jeffers a full day off, you know, and keeping Astudillo in there. Personally, I think I agree with you. I think in a close game, at least. In a close game, you bring Jeffers in defensively for the eighth and ninth, if he's available, if he's healthy, and I, you know, yeah, he's playing, so gotta think he's relatively healthy. So yeah, I agree because Astudillo is bad defensively, man. I mean, he's bad. He's a bad defensive catcher, and there have been so many pass balls and wild pitches that are technically wild pitches that a good catcher would have stopped. You reference a couple of them. I would see what Tomas Tolis can do. I get that you have to make a 40-man move for him, but I think he's got to be a better defensive catcher than Astudillo. And if you're not going to move Astudillo around and play him, you know, at other positions, then what's really his value? You know, I mean, he's a decent hitting catcher, but the defense is just it's so bad. It's so bad.
I don't mean to rip him, because I know that teammates like him. But I'm just saying, if you're going to take out Rooker from right field in the fifth, that's right field. And, hey, look, I appreciate that. And Jeffers, one, he's young, okay? So it's not like – and two, it's September in a 60-game season for which he has not been here the entire time. And three, he is not one of your top two catchers right now. So, like – the ability to put him in the eighth and say, okay, you're going to catch the eighth and ninth of this game and the entire second game, which, by the way, again, is a seven-inning game, all to me adds up to just common sense. And he's young. Okay, so he's sore. He's a catcher. He should be sore. But guess what he's going to do? He's going to block the ball. Or I think he's going to block the ball. So
the counterpoint to that, I'm not saying I disagree, but the counterpoint to that is you have a five-game lead on the number eight seed. You know, for the playoffs, they're just trying to coast in, right? These aren't must-win games right now, and so why push it, right?
But I think then why make the Rooker move?
Well, because with Rooker, it's a good point, but I think there's a big difference between playing right field and playing catcher. I think catchers need significantly more time off, even if they're young, than a right fielder. And let's be honest, Rooker, his bat plays, man, but the defense.
Oh, God, yeah.
But the defense is not good.
But you were off 2 days. Well, like that's the thing that I kept coming back to. You've got Wednesday. Jeffers has Wednesday and Thursday to basically play video games or lounge around or take a lot of hot baths. So I just thought that's weird because I appreciate the fact that it seems like Baldelli is embracing defense a lot more. And Astudillo, to your point, behind the plate, he's serviceable in a pinch when you absolutely have to do it, but it's not good. And can we eliminate, too, the snap throw to first base? I know it's cute and funny, but that's got disaster written all over it. That ball is going to be flying down the right field line.
I honestly think the reason he does that is because of that spring training game a couple years ago where he did a no-look throw and it like got on SportsCenter top 10 or whatever and he got a bunch of attention for it. I bet that's a big reason why he continues to do it. But look, he's not going to – if he's catching innings defensively in the playoffs, then things have gone really, really wrong.
Oh, great.
So you know, I don't think it's a huge issue. But I agree with you. If Jeffers is healthy, he should come – and it's a close game, he should come in and catch the last couple innings.
When Kepler comes back and is in right field, do you spot Rooker in for either him or Rosario more frequently? And I'm not saying that you bench either one, but if you're going up against the southpaw and Kepler in the small sample size, I should say, of 2020 so far against lefties has been bad, and Rosario, you don't know where the hell his head is. Do you start to at least try and get Rooker at bats in right or left field in place of one of those two guys occasionally? Because you're right, that bat plays, and I like his approach at the plate.
Yes, I definitely do, especially against lefties. Now, Rooker has reverse splits, which is interesting in the minors. He actually hits righties better than lefties. But the fact that Kepler and Rosario, especially Kepler this year, has been really bad against lefties, I put Rooker in there against any left-handed starting pitcher. And then you can replace him in the fifth. You know, if you knock that starter out and right-handed relievers are coming in, then you make the switch and you bring in Kepler Rosario. But I think, like we said, the bat plays, and we need to see, the Twins need to see what Rooker can give you at the major league level, because they have to make a decision on him. You know, I mean, they have so many corner outfield prospects between Rooker and Kirilloff and Larnach. They're going to have to make decisions on some of these guys. And so I think both because it gives you an advantage against lefties and because we just need to see what Rooker can do in the big leagues, I would play him against lefties. I don't know if I do it in the playoffs, although I would consider it. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, and he's looked good so far. The defense is not good, but the bat, his range is just very limited defensively. But the bat plays, man. And we knew it would play. I mean, that they drafted him in the first round strictly because of his bat. You know, one possibility is that he's the DH next year. You know, if Nelson Cruz leaves, Rooker could be your everyday DH.
Absolutely, yeah. No, he is – I like his approach. And the thing, too, is, you know, once again, in the Twins world, as you said, Jake, rest and recovery is a huge deal, right? So I would go to Rosario and or Kepler, and it's not a benching. It's not a punishment. I mean, if anybody deserves to be punished occasionally, it is Eddie. But they clearly don't like to say that. And I think their thought is that Rosario sort of rebels against that. But you could make a very good case that, hey, a lot of guys get days off here. It's no slight, but this guy can play. I did notice, so he didn't play in game two yesterday with 2 days off, and it's not Buxton. Polanco didn't play on Monday, and he didn't play in game two on Tuesday. I would keep an eye on that, because that to me says that there's something going on there, and it's probably not a big deal, but I am curious, because when he didn't play on Monday, Jake, I thought the whole thing was to play him in the back-to-back games, short games on Tuesday, and he sat out game two. Adrianza started at shortstop. So I'm curious if there's something that he's tweaked or something going on with him, because that was the one. The Buxton one didn't surprise me a bit. The Polanco one did a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible they're just giving him a couple of days off, but if there's an issue, if he's tweaked something, that's a major concern. I tweeted this a couple of days ago. You know, I thought Polanco was the MVP last year, and I think you could make a case that he's their most valuable player again this year. We talk about him less frequently than just about every player on the every relevant player on the team, and that's a testament to him. He's in the lineup every day. He's incredibly consistent with the bat, and he plays a serviceable, not great, but a serviceable shortstop. That combination of playing adequate defense at short and being a good bat and durability, that makes you so valuable, you know? And I get that WAR doesn't reflect that this year. His WAR was really strong last year, not this year, but it's a tiny sample. I just think he's critical to their success. And so, yeah, if he's dealing with some sort of lingering issue, then you give him all the days off he needs until the playoffs. And it's going to be this dance that we saw last year where they're giving guys off, but still trying to get them in enough to have at bats and have reps, you know, heading into the postseason. But that's a concern. Of course, that's a concern. Now, I will say this. 2 days ago, we were sounding the alarms about Nelson Cruz. He came back, played both games of the doubleheader, and hit two home runs. So it could be nothing, but it could be something. We don't know.
So it's quite clear that there are two guys on this team, at least, who tell Rocco if they're going to play or not, right? Cruz and Donaldson.
Yes.
Donaldson played both games. There is no way on God's green earth that Baldelli thought, I'm going to play in both games. I think we're talking about, and it might be just two guys, but I think those two in particular tell Rocco, I'm playing. And Rocco probably says, really, I don't know about this. You know, Nelly, we can DH somebody else in game two. And he says, I'm playing. Or Donaldson, same thing. It's an interesting dynamic because my guess is it's a very, very small list of players who tell Rocco what they're going to do. But it really seems like those two must, because Donaldson and Buxton, and Buxton did, both would have sat in game two, I think, in Rocco's world. And I think JD said, I've sat enough. I need the at-bats. I'm playing.
Oh, yeah. I picture Rocco very reluctantly writing in Josh Donaldson in the lineup in that second game. I think he's earned that right. You know, he's going to play when he wants to play. Same with Cruz, like you said. And Donaldson looks good. I mean, that three-run home run basically won him the game in game one. He's taking good at-bats. He doesn't look anything like he looked in that first week. And so, you know, by getting back a healthy Donaldson and Buxton, those are maybe, along with Polanco, your two most important players on the team, given the positions they play, how well they play it defensively,
yeah,
and their offense.
You're right.
That's not adding just, you know, two random starters. That's adding two of your absolute best players. And it's made a huge difference. Both those guys have won them games, you know. Donaldson won it with a three-run home run, essentially. Buxton had the walk-off infield single and is hitting for power. I mean, those two guys changed the whole dynamic of the team offensively and defensively.
Bullpen-wise, what's your concern about Trevor May?
He
goes through these really weird, hard-to-predict periods that seem to last like four or five games. The weird thing to me with May is, every time I think, you know, he's just found it now, he hits a skid like this, and you're like, oh, boy, this ain't good. His fastball, he can't spot it. There's a lot of stuff left up way too high. But then he seems to bounce back, too. All that being said, like yesterday was a continuation of one of these skids that I guess you just have to hope doesn't happen in the playoffs, because right, if it does, it could be trouble, because he is important, you know. He's not a guy that you could just be done with. But it's been a weird four or five games appearances for him.
Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, this is just who he is. And you just have to hope he doesn't happen in the playoffs. You can't not pitch him in the playoffs because, like you said, he's too important. And when he's on, he's a dominating reliever with that upper 90s fastball, and he can locate it well. But yeah, I mean, it's been a struggle for him. You know, this is what separates the truly elite, you know, Josh Haders of the world, Aroldis Chapman's, you know, fill in the blank, from good but not great relievers, you know, that they don't, those guys don't really go through many of these stretches. May does, you know, at his best, he is in that upper echelon, that upper tier of dominant relievers, but he has these periods where he loses command. Sometimes the pitch selection is a bit strange. You know, if you remember last year, he hung that like 0-2 breaking ball to Carlos Santana in a key game against Cleveland. He did that a couple of times last year. So he goes through these phases, and yeah, you just have to hope that he works through it. and that he's pitching his A game in the playoffs, but you have to pitch him no matter what, unless there's just a total meltdown in the last 15 games. You have to give him innings in the playoffs and just you pray, you know, you just pray with all of these relievers that, that they have their good stuff. I'm a little more worried about Duffy only because his velo has been a little bit down. He's more pitching in the 92, 93 range instead of 95, 96, like we saw him, I think, at the beginning of last year, of this year, and definitely last year. I wonder if there's a little bit of fatigue going on with him. They need him because he's their absolute best reliever.
Let's connect the dots on Duffy because that's a good topic to bring up. You remember the stretch where we got concerned because he didn't pitch and it seemed very odd, even for Rocco not to pitch him?
Yes.
Something's up. Something's up there. And it could be fatigue, although it would be really quick for fatigue to kick in. But I think going back to that stretch where he was just MIA, including in one game where it didn't make a lot of sense, I think that there's something going back to that stretch that is still impacting him now. Because he doesn't look like the dominant. I mean, he came out of the gate this year dominant. He looked absolutely fantastic. And then he just sort of disappeared for, was that 3 or 4 games? It was a substantial period of time for a bullpen arm.
Yeah.
And he came back after that, and he doesn't look terrible. He doesn't look awful, but he doesn't look the same. I think there's something probably directly related to that stretch that's still impacting him.
Yeah, well, listen, we've seen so many pitchers go down with arm issues. I think the Rays are the most amazing organization in the league. They lose everybody. They trade away everybody, and they always are making the playoffs. They're in first place, but they've had, I think, like 10 pitchers go on the IL, something ridiculous.
Yep.
And it's because of the short ramp-up. You know, these guys started ramping up in March, got shut down for 3.5 months, and then had 3 weeks to ramp back up, and it's clearly not enough for the pitchers because injuries are just way up across the league. And so I wonder if maybe he's dealing with some arm soreness or – shoulder issues. This is total speculation. Yeah, like I don't have any inside info on that, but it's true. He hasn't looked quite as elite and dominant as he did at the beginning of the year. I don't know if resting him is going to help. I don't know what the solution is. Maybe he just has to fight through it. But he's another one of those guys. Like if you're going to make a run in the playoffs, he has to be the Tyler Duffy of, you know, July and the first part of August. Not the Tyler Duffy we've seen the last couple of outings, which is good, but not great.
Last question, and I've asked Mackey this question, I've asked Royce, and I will ask you. What is your theory on why baseball, besides just being baseball, what is your theory on why they didn't just seed each league's 8 playoff teams by record? The Twins right now are the first wild card, but they're one of the best teams in the American League. And instead it goes the 3 first place teams, the 3 second place teams, and then they go get the third place, the 2 best third place teams, or the 2 best teams besides those clubs. Why on earth wouldn't you, in this weird year where it's just sort of all going to be mishmash together and you really can't control playoff matchups, why wouldn't you have just said, you are what your record is and we're taking the top 8? Why are we doing it this way?
That's what the NBA does now, right? It's just top 8. Like the divisions don't mean anything, I believe.
I believe that is correct. Hockey is different. Hockey takes the top. What do they take? They take the top amount from each. I think the top 3 from each division, and then go with a wild card. But I just don't get, like, as a 1-year experimentation, I guess, by baseball.
Yeah.
Why you wouldn't have just said the 8 best teams are going to get in and they're going to be seeded by their record? It makes no sense to me that the Twins are the first wild card.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I would reward division winners. Because I think you're basically just playing the teams in your division and then the 20 interleague games. And so I think if you beat, you know, all of these teams in your division and you win that division, you deserve to be a high seed.
Okay.
The whole the seeding of 4 through 6 to the second place teams, that to me makes no sense. Like, give the top 3 seeds to the division winners and then go 4 through 8 just based on record. Like, the whole second place thing is dumb. So I agree with you. I mean, I don't think that makes sense. I think, but what makes me even more upset about this, honestly, is the total lack of incentive to win your division. There's no incentive to win your division. In fact, if the Yankees end up being the 7 or 8 seed, and it sure is looking like that right now, and they get Stanton and Judge back, you know, a week before the playoffs, the 1 seed might be the most difficult matchup, because you're playing an 8 seed Yankees team that starts Garrett Cole in game 1 and has all these sluggers back. Like, you have to give some incentive to the top teams, whether it's a bye or whether it's making the series a three-game series, but the lower-seeded team has to win twice, you know, and the upper-seeded team only has to win once, right?
Right.
You see that sometimes in amateur ball or in college ball. Like, some sort of incentive for the top teams, because otherwise, if you're the Twins, right, like, you'd probably rather play the Rays or the A's as the 7 or 8 seed than play New York if you end up being the 1 seed, you know, or you know, like, I don't think there's any incentive for them to win. There might be incentive for them to lose late in the season. So, like,
yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. So I just, it's like,
I just don't get why you wouldn't have, and I'm fine with your idea. All right. Take the three teams that win their division, give them the top seeds, and they're good teams. That's fine. But then this whole thing of East 2, Central 2, West 2, and then one. It's like, really? You had to make it this complicated and convoluted in a one-off, which is, you know, I mean, this is, I don't know what they're going to do going forward, but this was the easiest formula, just to say, let's keep it as simple as possible. And in typical baseball fashion, they're like, oh, no, let's not.
Yeah,
and, well, it's just confusing. Yeah.
The Astros are going to end up being probably the second place team in the West, and I think they're one game over 500 right now, you know? So, like,
yeah, I know.
If the Twins end up as a 7 seed and end up, you know, 9 or 10 games over 500, like, yeah, it makes no sense that the Astros would be seeded higher. But I just, yeah, you to give no incentive to winning the division is just so dumb. I mean, a lot of these
times, baseball.
They have, yeah, well, that's, it's just Rob Manfred.
It's baseball.
Yep, exactly. But they just have no incentive, especially this last week of the season. They're going to have no incentive, you know, to play for anything in these once these last few games come in a couple of weeks. So
wait till you see who the Twins stick out there when they really don't care.
Oh man,
they'll be going plucking everyone available that they can from St. Paul that currently might be on the 40-man.
Oh, absolutely.
Those lineups are going to be glorious. Adrianza will be at first.
Yep.
Who else will be?
Well,
who will
Sean Poppin will be starting games. You know, maybe they'll call up somebody like Corey Guerin and add him back to the 40-man.
And then you know what you do? Then you catch Astudillo for all 9 innings.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Final thoughts?
Well, you know, they needed needed a split in St. Louis, and they got it. They get a couple days off. They've played more games than anybody else in baseball. I think 2 more games than anybody else in baseball. So they get some off days here now, which will help them. And at this point, it would take a total disaster, like a 10-game losing streak for them not to make the playoffs. Yeah. So now it's really about kind of coasting in, winning enough that you feel comfortable, and hopefully getting Kepler back and maybe Garver. Garver, I saw, was swinging, was taking, I think, BP and was going to catch a bullpen session, so maybe they get him back. But, I mean, it's basically going to be cruise control the last 15 games as long as you don't go on a big losing streak. I'd still like to see them call up a big prospect, whether that's Jahan Duran. Jordan Balazovic, by the way, is in camp now.
I saw that they brought him in. That was intriguing because I didn't know that you could bring guys into that camp after you had started, which
you
obviously
can. You can, and it's probably just to get eyes on him, but I do wonder if they're thinking that he could be like a Brusdar Graterol from last year, where they brought him up very late, you know, and he made an impact. It's possible. I don't think it's likely, but it's possible.
Why wasn't he from day one, do you think?
That totally baffled me. I don't know if there was some injury that they didn't report or some other issue, but why Balazovic, arguably the top pitching prospect in the organization, wasn't in St. Paul made no sense to me. It was weird.
All right, we're done. Score North Twins podcast. We ordinarily tape these on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We'll be going back to that next week. Twins have a couple days off, though, so we decided to talk about the doubleheader in St. Louis. Back in action on Friday against Cleveland. He is Jake. I'm Jed. We'll talk to you soon.